Welcome, everyone. My name is Mike Verbsky, and you are listening to Limitless. This podcast is brought to you by the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. And hello, everybody. Welcome back to Limitless. Again, my name is Mike. I am your host for this podcast. For those listeners new and returning, I hope you're ready for a very exciting episode. This evening, I am happy to welcome Shahali Ayers. Shahali is a model. She is a musician and an advocate for people to be included in our communities, both with disabilities and also without. Shahali, welcome to our podcast.
Hi, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. So what can you tell us about your limb loss and your journey with the community?
Well, I am a congenital amputee. So I was born missing my right arm just right after the elbow. And I think my journey, which is probably similar to a lot of people's journey, I went through a lot of different phases being born this way. You know, when I was really young, I didn't have a hard time, you know, with it. I didn't care. Kids didn't care when you're really young, but as I started to grow up, you go through, you know, the awkward adolescence, junior high, high school, and I went through periods hiding my arm, being very insecure, and then finally in high school being like, screw it, I can't care. And then just trying to, you know, it's not, I don't want to say the constant, but there are times in my life now that I'm older where certain occasions I will feel uncomfortable because of my limb difference. But for the most part, I've adapted and I've become really used to it. And, you know, it's just a part of who I am.
Now, as a child, did you use a prosthetic in your day-to-day activities, or was that something you didn't really use just more as you got older?
I did, actually. So the funny thing is, when I was younger, I used a body-powered prosthesis, and I would wear it, and I could pop it on and off super easy, and I just fling it off my shoulder. So my mom would, like, laugh telling the story. Like, I would have it, like, hanging off my back because it has, like, a harness. So I'd be, like, hanging off of one arm, you know, because harnessed on there that way. So, and then I'd just fling it around, and I'd put it back on if I needed to use it. So yeah, I did wear it as a kid all the time. I went through a bunch of them because I'd break them. So I wore it all the time. And then through the awkward stages when I was super uncomfortable with myself and I was trying to hide it, that's when I stopped wearing it. And then I'd use like jackets or different things to cover it up, to hide it, which I think just made it more obvious. It didn't help at all.
I was going to ask you that, if you thought that was better or worse.
No, you know, honestly, looking back, I think when I was hiding it, I think two things. So when you're self-conscious about things, I think it draws people's attention to it because you're worried about it. And then secondly, I'm hiding it. So people are always like, well, why, what's she hiding? So once I stopped hiding it and then I was, you know, in the more accepting stage in my life, like I had way less questions and way less bullying actually too, once I didn't care anymore.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, it has been interesting. So.
As a child and as you were growing up, what sorts of activities or hobbies, sports possibly, were you interested in?
Oh, I loved sport. So I have three brothers. So I grew up in, you know, small country town with three boys, and I also wanted to be a boy. So I liked playing basketball. Basketball was my sport. And I also can throw a football pretty well, catch a football. So I like tossing around in football. I don't really like running, but I was in track.
Sounds about right for a lot of kids.
I was in t-ball. So yeah, I played a lot of different sports when I was really young. I was also in gymnastics.
Were there any specific challenges that you had to face as you were growing up?
As far as sport?
Sports or any other hobbies or feeling included?
Well, with sport, the funny thing was when I would start a sport, say with, you know, or in PE, let's say, I remember like coaches and the PE teacher telling me like, well, we have no idea how you're going to do this. We don't know how to help you do this. But so I would always kind of be left to figure out how to, you know, catch or throw the ball or by myself. Like nobody was there to kind of coach me to figure it out. And then the other challenges, you know, were just dealing with other students, you know, I did deal with bullying from time to time when I was younger, and I became very angsty as a teenager because of all of it. And so those are just some of the challenges I had.
And as you continue to grow, especially through high school and moving forward into adulthood, how do you feel that those challenges made you a stronger person or kind of helped you prepare for adult life?
Well, I definitely think that the teacher's inability to really, you know, teach me or help me kind of helped me become a problem solver on my own. And I am very, very competitive. So I don't know if having a disability or, you know, having a limb difference is one of the reasons for that. I just know that I always want to prove people wrong. So it might be. And I like to win. So that might have had something to do with the psychology behind it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, any sort of reason to get those competitive juices flowing, whether it's the competition of the sporting event or, like you said, just to prove people wrong, is always a motivator factor.
Oh, yeah. It's been, I think, my number one in my whole life.
So when was it exactly that you started becoming interested in modeling?
I always wanted to. So mm-hmm. Whenever my parents would take pictures, I was always wanted to be the center of attention. I just liked it, I guess. And so I wanted to at a really young age, and I would try out for, you know, little modeling competitions at the mall, and I wouldn't get it and I would cry about it. And it wasn't until I was in college when I moved to Honolulu, where I went to college, and I've lived the past 18 years, that I really, it was the first time that I could meet an agency and try to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And that didn't really work out, but that's where I started to really pursue it.
There seems to be a perception that with modeling, they're always looking for that type in terms of advertisements or commercials or something they're looking for.
Yeah.
How were you able to kind of break through some of those stereotypes to show them what you're able to do as a model?
Like you're saying, especially when I tried out, this was years ago, I won't age myself by telling you how long ago when I did.
You can't tell, but I've got a lot of gray hairs on this side of the microphone. So it's all good.
So when I did try out, this was during a time when it definitely was not as inclusive as it is today. And I think today we still have a lot of things that we're trying to overcome as a community. But back then, wasn't inclusive at all. So when I went in, the agent told me, there's no way anyone's going to take a picture of you. There's no way this is ever going to happen. You have one arm. There's no way. And it was just no. And I went to many different agencies and it was no, 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 no. So I just decided I was going to do it anyway. I'm just going to do it on my own, you know? So similar to basketball, it was like, they didn't know how to help me out. So this was very similar. So, well, you don't know how to get me there, but I want to do it. So I'll figure it out myself. So that's what I had to do in order to break into the industry and kind of show them I could do it before I was allowed to really participate in it.
Did you find early on that there was more of a tendency for them to want to hide your limb loss in the photographs or in the video versus bring out the positivity in it?
Yes. So the first magazine, I was in a couple different magazine covers in Hawaii, and all of the different editorials, different spreads that I did for them, it was all hiding my arm.
Okay.
Excuse me. So yeah, I would have to hide my arm, where they would say like, okay, let's try this again, but can you put your arm back here, or, you know, have sleeves? And I was just, but at that time I was just happy to be doing it. So it didn't bother me until later, but in the beginning I was fine with it.
Okay. And are you finding now that it's more accepting that you have limb loss? Are there more people coming into to be a model with disabilities or with limb loss? Or is it still, you know, trying to fight through those stereotypes?
That's an interesting question. I feel like there is more visibility. I feel like there are a lot more people going after it, but it could have been the case that they were also being told no, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure, but I have noticed, at least as far as casting, that the irony now is I'm getting casted for opportunities because of my limb difference. Whereas before it was like, no, we have to hide it. Now it's like, oh, let's show it. Let's, you know.
Right.
So I'm getting roles based off of it. What's nice to see now, you know, now that, you know, we have Instagram and all these other social platforms, are that there are tons of people that are visible with different disabilities. And when I was younger, I didn't have access to any of that.
Right.
So I think it's really wonderful for, you know, all the younger generations to have all sorts of people that can show them what's possible. I think that's awesome.
You know, it's interesting. I was running a support group a few years ago, and one of the participants, initially when I met him, he would try to get these small acting parts. And at first, when he was getting them, he goes, yep, I got another Civil War, you know, casualty, you know.
Yeah.
And he had the long gray hair and he had the mustache, so he kind of fit the roles. And he was able to play that time period really well. He goes, but yeah, they got me as the amputee again, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But then later on, the more he was doing it, he was getting, you know, some smaller parts where, as he put it, he got to leave his leg on and he got to, you know, walk onto the set with both feet, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he was getting, you know, more roles where he could just be, you know, Ed.
Oh, that's really great.
Which was great for him because at first, you know, he definitely got typecast.
Yeah. I have yet to not be typecast, I think.
Really? They still kind of see you for a specific role, you think?
I think so. I think those are the gigs that I'm landing are looking for that specific look, right? I will say, though, the first major photo shoot I did was for Nordstrom. And what I do love about that was that they asked me, well, would you wear a prosthesis with this coat? How would you wear it?
Oh, that's
interesting. So that one felt very true to me. That was really great. And that was the first one. And that was quite a while ago. So that was pretty great of them. But they've always been really good with inclusion.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, to not only, you know, have that inclusion factor, but also to give you that artistic touch to it as well. For, you know, would you wear this? Would you wear that? Because I know we have patients that come through all the time. And that's one of the things they try to figure out is, you know, what can I wear with my prosthetic? You
right.
Know, this is the way I always dressed before. Can I do that now? Or am I going to have to switch what I wear and trying to find their style again?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah, because I don't wear sleeves, especially living in Hawaii for so long. I didn't wear sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I'm in a colder climate, it's like, yeah, exactly that. How do I wear this with or without my prosthesis?
Right. Is there anything that you really kind of can't wear because of the prosthetic? I've seen, you know, on your pages, you know, your prosthetic seems pretty sleek, pretty narrow. Is there anything that you can't really wear with it?
For the most part, the wrist is small enough, so if I take the hand off, I can I can get in most sleeves. I think if something is very tailored or very fitted, I get a little nervous because I don't want to break it. So I haven't found many things, but I think there have been a couple things. But for the most part, it fits wonderfully. Yeah,
as I say, really, and looking, I say yours is pretty sleek, actually. You know, sometimes some of these prosthetics, they end up, you know, being kind of bulky for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. And we have some extra challenges. Through your modeling, what sort of any special experiences, or did you have any real like life-changing moments that you were able to encounter and be a part of?
Oh, I think all of it has been some, you know, like life-changing in some way. I mean, starting from the beginning, you know, being told it's not going to happen, to walking in, you know, Milan Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week with other people with disabilities, you know, it just makes me cry. you know, there, especially when I was in Milan, I actually did cry because it was like all of us were told at one point or another, like, you're never going to accomplish, you know, your dreams or goals. And to be there with them and do it was, it was incredible, you know, and that's what it's kind of exciting for this journey and to be a part of it. And I started at that point, and now to watch it grow and to watch more and more companies have different campaigns for inclusion is really exciting to me to be a part of it and to watch it grow.
Absolutely. So when did you start getting involved? Speaking of inclusion, when did you start getting involved with the Global Disability Inclusion?
I've been working with Global Disability Inclusion for, COVID really messed me up, but I want to say 5 or 6 years.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I'm still working on what day it is today. So forgetting about, you know, 2020, 2021, I have no idea.
Exactly. So we started working together, and that's a really cool story too, because I met, so the CEO of Global Disability Inclusion, her name is Meg O'Connell, and I met her before any agency ever worked with me. So okay. During that time, when I started to become an ambassador for her, even prior to becoming an ambassador for her, her company would sponsor me to go to New York Fashion Week, to go to do all these things. So she definitely helped me when no one else helped me with anything in my career. So that, you know, it's a really big deal, and I owe a lot to them.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about a life-changing moment for you. These inclusion-based companies, which is getting that conversation started. And, you know, sometimes these are difficult conversations to kind of figure out how to initiate. But companies like this and your role as an ambassador to them, hopefully over time, you know, some of these conversations have gotten easier over the years for people to have and to get started. But sometimes they still are a big challenge in the workforce and in day-to-day. So hopefully over time, we can make them even easier to have.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully it's just like every conversation, you know?
Hopefully, yes. What sorts of activities or events do you do as an ambassador for Global Disability?
Well, since COVID, we've been on hold for the last couple of years, but different speaking engagements or presentations for, you know, inclusion events that we've done, you know, I think Pacific Rim was one of the last ones that we worked at, and just giving, I think one of the things that I kind of helped bring to the table for her is just telling my story, giving kind of a personal story to what it means to be inclusive and how companies can really change people's lives. And I'm just one example of those lives that can be changed.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You were recently in a music video also.
Yes.
How was that experience?
Oh, it was so much fun. It was so much fun. I did a music video in New York for a band that's Uni and the Urchins. And it was it's very out there and artistic and fun. And I like that kind of stuff. So I was really happy to be a part of it and glad they reached out to me.
So how did they find you?
They found me on Instagram, which, okay, believe it or not, I get a lot of inquiries through my social or through my website.
Mm-hmm. And had you ever done anything with music videos before, or...
No.
Was this a new thing?
I'd never done a music video before. I'd done other commercials.
Okay.
Commercials and stuff like that, but I've never done like a music video. Well, I guess that's not true. I don't know if you consider it a music video, but what is it called? Oh my gosh. Oh, Savage X Fenty. So I was in Savage X Fenty, Rihanna's, you know, runway show. It's on Amazon. For season 3. So I was on that, and I don't know if you consider it a music video. I guess kind of like a music video slash like runway show.
It's a little
but
bit
I
of
was
both.
In that. Yeah, it was, yeah. But I was in there. So
you're turning into a jack of all trades, if you will, here.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, you know, that's part of the fun. Like you asked, you know, what have you enjoyed? It's a fun ride, like just seeing, you know, where this is taking me.
Any of these new experiences that you've taken on, are there any of them that as you've come up go, oh, I got to do that again?
I would love to do a music video again.
Okay.
That was so much fun. Well, yes, maybe not any music video, but I'd love to do another very like artistic, avant-garde, fun thing like that again.
And you were playing violin in that one video, yes?
I was pretending, yes.
Okay.
I can't actually play violin at all, but I was pretending, which was cool because, I've never tried to play an instrument with my prosthesis.
Never, huh?
No. So when they asked me, can you play the violin? I said, well, I don't know. We can see. So I faked it. I think I faked it pretty well.
All right.
I'm pretty proud of it. So.
With some of the experiences that you've been fortunate enough to have as you've gone through, is there anything rather that you haven't tried yet that you would really want to?
I really would love to act. So, like the commercials and stuff that I've been in, they're non-speaking roles usually. I would
Okay.
love to be in like a speaking role and kind of, I think I'll always model, so I don't want to say transition out of modeling. I will be 100 years old and still modeling. Whether people like it or not, I love it so much.
Good for you.
But I think acting, I
Okay.
think, more speaking roles and like, more serious roles would be fun. I want to play like an evil character.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of spreading your wings a bit there from the artistic avant-garde and then switching over to the evil arch nemesis there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would always be fun, I don't want to play someone nice. I'd rather play like someone opposite and like evil, and because those are the best roles.
They certainly can be. Those are fun to watch sometimes. It's interesting. The other day, I caught some interview with John Lithgow on TV, and he's one of those actors where, today he's doing some comedy, and tomorrow he's the villain, and then the next day he's doing something else, and that you just never know where you're going to see him next. So you might be the next one there. We're not going to know
I
where
mean,
to find you.
let's not jinx that.
As we touched on a few different areas here. What's the one thing, that one piece of advice that you always want people to know, whether you're talking to somebody who's going through their own journey or, if you're trying to find that clinician who doesn't know what to do with a patient, what's the one thing you want them to really know?
Oh, wow, those are two very different things. I think if you're a person struggling with a disability or, a limb difference, and that can be struggling in all sorts of ways, just know that it's not always going to be like this. Circumstances change and times change, So it's not always going to be as hard as it might be now, and to stay positive. And I think for a clinician, I think, my advice would be just communicate with your patients and see what works best with them, and do kind of like what Nordstrom did and what other, companies are doing now, and ask the questions like what works best for you, and how can we make this work for your current situation.
Definitely. I've had a few people on and they've talked about, their experiences with whether it be therapists or healthcare professionals in general. And that seems to be a uniform that in some way along their process, they felt that they were either being talked over or down to, or they only spoke to their family members in the room, and they were never felt that they were fully included in those conversations.
Oh no. See, yeah, that would have to change.
Yeah,
Definitely would have to work on
that's
that.
definitely something that we all need to work on more.
Yeah.
How did you find, did you have a lot of therapy as a child growing up or not as much?
I did. So when I started to wear my prosthetics, like when I was younger, I did a lot of PT to learn how to use it. So I even at one point I learned how to cut use scissors with my prosthesis. Don't
Okay.
ask me how to do it now, I forgot. But through all the years I stopped wearing it. But yeah, I did a lot of work on that.
And did you have any particular positive or negative experiences with your therapy?
Oh, I was so young. I don't recall specifically.
Okay.
I have done some therapy as an older, more recently. And I have thankfully I haven't had any memorable, like, negative experiences. So
Well,
I
that's
think
good.
everything has been pretty, yeah, I think so. I think I'd remember it if it was bad, but I don't remember anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I had somebody on just recently and he was telling me about his experience and he goes, yeah, but they're closed now, so it's not as big of a deal. And I went, oh my goodness, no, that's a really big deal. Like when you have
actually,
someone that,
now that
they, they went that far and I went, oh no.
Actually, now that you say that, I do have a negative. So no, I did. So I was a Shriners patient for a long time. As a child, I was until I was 18. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So they would get me prosthetics free of charge up until the age of 18. I'm not sure if they still do that. And then as an adult, I was looking for a prosthetics provider and I did have one. And I mean, I didn't know any better, but they fitted me for prosthesis and the prosthesis never fit well. And I complained about it. And, you know, this doesn't, it hurts to wear it. And they just told me, well, this is, you have to get used to it. So I didn't know that was negative until I've gone now to Arm Dynamics and they've made me the best fitting prosthesis I ever had. And their whole thing was, if it doesn't feel good, tell us, we'll fix it, we'll change it. It has to feel good. So it wasn't until I worked with them that I realized, oh, this other experience was not a good one. And I ended up not wearing that prosthesis, the one that didn't feel good, because it didn't feel good. So I never wore it.
Sure. And that's something I preach to my patients all the time, which is you have to feel good with the prosthetic. You have to like the prosthetic and you need that positive relationship and back and forth with the prosthetist also, because it should be a long relationship. I mean, I'm just a physical therapist. So if anything happens with your prosthetic, I'm not touching it. I'm going to call your prosthetist, you know? So if you don't have that good relationship working with them, it's hard. And then like you found you just didn't wear the prosthetic.
Yeah, I didn't. And how sad, because they are very expensive too. So
yeah,
it was very sad. And I still have it. It's probably in fine working condition, but I'll still never wear it because it doesn't feel good. So
of course, right. It doesn't feel good. And then on top of that, aside from not feeling good or anything aesthetically, it's not functional for you either.
No, it's not. Yeah. So I was very fortunate to find Arm Dynamics. And I think that's another important thing for, you know, for patients to look for is do find somebody that you can talk to. Like we were talking about communication, find somebody that you feel comfortable with, that you can talk to, that you can say, this doesn't feel good and not feel weird saying that. And get somebody that supports you.
I think
that'll be the best thing.
Absolutely. Like I said, getting that communication and having that good support system around you will only help you and help someone have success. Yeah. Well, Shahali, I want to thank you so much for coming on this evening. This was a great conversation. We covered a lot of topics tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on. I had fun. This wasn't as scary as I thought.
I told you so.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everyone out there enjoyed this episode of Limitless with Shahali Ehlers, and I hope you stay tuned. We have many more episodes coming up soon, and we're going to keep bringing you the information and the insights that you're all looking for.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to Limitless. If you're interested in learning more about the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and at our website, www.amputationrehab.org. I hope you enjoyed this talk today, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and information coming to you soon.